Good morning, guys. So we're here with a super world first exclusive with Bragan. Hey, Bragan.
Hey guys, good to be here. Thanks for having me on. But
Hey,
yeah,
Bragan.
excited.
Fellow creator, if you want to use that tag. I know Martin will roll his eyes.
I'm reviewing it right now.
yeah, and you write Last Week in Context for people that don't know, which is a super useful newsletter which goes out once a week and gives us the kind of lowdown of what's going on in the construction tech. Or is it construction tech? It goes a little bit wider.
Yeah, construction tech, you can make infrastructure tech. I think the reason why it goes wider is because construction is an industry of industries, and you just need to think about, oh, we can use a manufacturing solution or a logistics tech solution in our industry. So I just try and put that lens of, could we use it on site? And it doesn't matter where that solution comes from. It might be defense tech, but as long as we can use it on site, then I go, all right, we should include this.
So what happened last week in contact, Dragon?
I mean, last week in Contech, I think the big headline that I've been thinking about is just the explosion in data centers, and related to AI use and how that's actually affecting downstream energy availability. So one of the big headlines last week was Microsoft came out and said, we're going to get an offtake agreement for energy of renewable energy of $10 billion, which is one of the biggest ever. I think it's 8 times bigger than the last one. And they've gone, we need this because we need to power our data centers, and governments around the world are running out of power, and they're saying you need to give us renewable energy and guaranteed renewable energy. That's the only way that will allow permitting of your data center. So that was interesting. And then Amazon also bought a nuclear power plant next to a data center. So everyone, all these big tech guys are starting to realize, hey, we need renewable energy, and we're going to start funding or supporting offtake agreements just so that we can get our AI footprint increased.
That's quite crazy. So hold on a sec. Have you made it as a startup or a founder when you buy a nuclear power plant? Like, is that the new
I was going
benchmark?
to ask.
So, me and Martin were debating last night what success means. Maybe that's the new metric.
Yeah.
And how can you buy a nuclear power plant? Can you, are they
Well,
even allowed?
it was linked to the data center where they bought, I think it's in Tallinn, but now we're seeing this rise of SMRs, so small modular nuclear reactors. And Last Energy is a good company there. They've gone, nuclear reactors are known, but the delivery and construction is something that we can standardize and modular. So why don't we give big factories, why don't we give data centers, anything like green manufacturing, why don't we give them localized power generation? And as we go to renewable energy in the decentralized grid, it's becoming an option. So I think it was Illinois is starting to allow SMRs. So a lot of states are realizing this is an option, but we just haven't seen feasibility at scale yet.
Yeah, Martin, you shared an interesting stat about the demand for power and data centers before we hit
Yes,
record.
I tried to quote or try, perhaps even misquote what Adam from Fundamentals said to us a week ago. In one of the interviews, he said that currently the data centers are taking around 4% or 4 to 6% of the power from the grid. And because of the demand for chips and the whole supply of the demand of the AI in the recent years, this will have to increase to 26% in the next very short period of time. So that shows like 5x on the, you need to increase the energy like 5x than the currently is you're
Was it
taking from the
globally?
grid. I'm not sure,
I'm
to be
guessing
honest.
so. Just because I done some, I was look, I was doing some research, and I found that in, for example, in Ireland, by 2028, that because of the data center surge, the power consumption required by these facilities will go from 15 to 30%. So it's like roughly 15. It was more than double. And in Denmark, from 1% to 15% of total power consumption. So the electrification race or game is like full speed ahead from now.
Yeah, what does it mean? What does it mean like for construction? I think it's definitely some sort of inflation. It's definitely within the sector associated with labor and the materials. What else would that mean?
Yeah, I think also if I was a startup and I'm building a reality capture solution, for example, something horizontal, I'd go, I'm going to start targeting contractors in this sector to partner with and to grow with. I think it's also a statement of this is where the opportunity and revenue generation is if you are building for construction.
Yeah, so we visited XYZ last month within their headquarters in London, and that's exactly what they do within their augmented reality
AI, yeah.
Headset. They focus on data.
Maybe an ethical or social question to consider. Obviously, we have other crises in construction, particularly housing. So where should resource go? Power in AI or housing people?
I think that thinking about it from like supply, demand, and where the money goes point of view, I don't want to say no one cares about housing, but the probably real money will be made in the more commercial activity, which is the data centers, because that's where people will be able to make money. So housing will stay on the side or will be the last one to do something about. That's my cynical approach to things.
I think you're probably accurate, to be honest.
Yeah.
Where money goes, energy flows.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay.
Excuse the pun. Yeah, also on data centers. So like some of the traditional data centers that are built are apparently not fit for purpose either. So they built like these, there was like a power requirement for each of the modules or units, whatever they call them, which has now been exceeded because of the demand for AI. So I'm not sure what it means and whether it means that existing data centers will now need to be sort of upgraded and repurposed. But that's probably an interesting space to watch. And I guess there's a huge opportunity there for people, someone who wants to tackle it.
Ragan, have you seen any startups in this area of data centers?
Yeah, there's, I think it was GS Futures just invested in Phaidra, which was energy use optimization. I think I could be getting them confused, but I think they were energy use optimization for data centers, and they came from ex-Google. So they were the people who optimized the energy use in data centers using AI for Google. So ironically, the solution for energy optimization is using AI, which we need the footprint for as well. And there's another one, Zakua, when they did their fundraising announcement of their new fund, they announced that they invested in a data center startup as well. I can't remember the details, but it might've been retrofitting parts of data centers or like getting more capacity out of existing data centers. I'm not too sure, but everyone's looking at data centers because construction is growing there. And the opportunities there.
So basically, this innovation you're talking about is about optimization of the construction processes or the
energy use. How do you reduce energy use? You can use the AI. There was an interesting patent a few years ago where Google was looking at how to put data centers floating in the ocean, so you get the water to cool down the data center. Yeah. Okay. So it's really interesting.
Oh, I've seen that. It was like a barrel which was immersed within the ocean or something like that, right?
Yeah. But it's really interesting. It's all about energy use. So how do you optimize that?
Yes.
Can you not repurpose the heat from these factories to like heat like a small village nearby or whatever?
I think there's thermal battery concepts with like getting the heat and then putting it into salt and then transporting that around the country and using the really hot salt to create electricity generation. There's been talk of that, but I haven't seen it commercialized effectively.
Yeah, so where is this energy going to come from? Like, so what Adam said, from 4% to 26%. So that's like 5-6x increase. So obviously other sectors needs to be supplied at the same or similar rate that they used to be. But suddenly you've got such a large multiple on the increase. So where is this energy going to come from?
I think Owen said it. It's got to be nuclear. I mean, where else can you? Obviously, you can do renewables. Everyone's building it, but nuclear's got to be on the table.
You've also got to consider that it's not just AI. Cars as well is a big debating point. Like, flooding the market with electric vehicles. I know there's like debate and skepticism around the whole idea of EVs and perhaps where the future goes. I think you wrote something in yours, Bragan, about hydrogen.
Yeah.
I think
as this becomes critical, hydrogen could become interesting. We can retrofit cars. The Department of Energy in a decade wants the cost of hydrogen to reduce to, I think it's $1 per kilo, or there's like a big reduction that they're going for and they're on track to. And it could be that hydrogen is what we use for specific use cases. So they were saying for long-haul trucking in California, we only need 26 hydrogen fuel hubs across the state because they follow specific freight routes. So maybe we just use hydrogen for specific use cases. And instead of thinking about everyone's on combustion engines, some people use hydrogen for, you know, X purpose, and we use electric for X purpose. So it could just be a diversion of the types of energy that we use for transportation modes.
Mm-hmm. On this renewable energy side, that's also going to probably, is it going to be what, PV panels, or because I don't think you can just do nuclear energy plants like in a year probably, or 2 years, right? Or you can ship it from somewhere and install it somewhere else. It's probably like maybe not a decade, but multi-year project. So it doesn't seem like something that can be done.
Well, you can't just say nuclear. There's got to be like more than one. But there's not like some magic like plasma that we can pull out of the universe and say, oh, we're now going to use this as power.
Yeah. And I think we need to touch on transmission. Like, we need to build the transmission to the end user for all of these. And there's regulation on reducing permitting time, but we don't have grid infrastructure or critical components of the grid. And then we got to build all of that, permit it really quickly. How are we going to do that in time? It's going to be really difficult.
Seems interesting. Like a car crash.
Yeah. Interesting that explosion of AI in the last two years might lead to some bottlenecks in some similar with some other industries like construction, for example, and building, and inflation, I think, associated with that because of the large volume of building those.
Luckily, construction, we still need to get our data house in check before we go too wild on AI. So we'll probably be one of the last industries to fully adopt or put too much demand on these data centers. Anyway, shall we talk about content creation?
Maybe you also have, Brian, something interesting about hiring civil engineers and product managers.
Yeah, we can talk about that as well. The interesting point was I started to notice, I track all the jobs every week from startups that are raising, and more are starting to hire project managers and civil engineers, because what they're doing is they're realizing the bottleneck on adoption is actually construction. So there's an EV ride-hailing startup in India that's gone, oh, we can't get more supply until we build charging infrastructure. So we're going to start building charging infrastructure. And there's a funny story with line marking.
These are construction tech startups, or not necessarily construction tech startups?
Well, that's a construction tech startup. Well, it's a transportation startup, really. But they're falling into that space. And I think that's interesting. And then, relatedly, on the Tesla front, they realize their vehicles don't work unless there's good line marking. So they started marking the lines near their test areas. And then what it resulted in is this massive consolidation and M&A in the line marking segment, because they're going, oh, instead of doing once a year, now you probably have to do 3 to 4 times a year if you've got autonomous cars. So you start to see downstream that the biggest bottleneck on future tech and like transport is infrastructure. So how do we fix that? And let's use the VC funding to fix that. So it's just a really interesting. And if I'm a civil engineer, why don't I work for a startup? Like, that's the exciting frontier edge of construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interestingly, yesterday we had a super serious with Monumental in Amsterdam, and they don't have any construction related people within their team, which and they are a bricklaying company.
That's really interesting.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And I can only assume why, because people within our industry are sometimes very, very narrowly focused and don't see bigger picture, which they're trying to supply robotics for bricklaying. And you can't have like a very traditional industry focus approach towards solving this problem with robotics, then being like maybe perhaps close-minded.
Yeah. Mm. Their approach was like hire general people, and then like they have like a wider, should we say, horizon for thinking, as opposed to people that are too already fixated on like one component of a robot, or let's say construction, and they all kind of learn together. Okay, let's go on to Martin's favorite topic of his lifelong dream of becoming a full-time content creator in the last few years.
100%. All right, I'll leave you guys to it.
Yeah. Yeah, so Bragan, tell us a little bit about Last Week in Contact. You've been doing this for now for how long? And what was the kind of thinking and that brought you to do it, and what's the goal?
Yeah, so God, it's been about 11 months, so it's been an interesting process. So it's almost getting on the year, which will be exciting. But it came about because I was always interested in tech startups from what I was doing in uni. And then you go on a civil engineering construction site and you look around and realize that processes haven't really changed in a long time, and there wasn't really much tech enablement. And I was always interested in tech, so I saw more and more startups and I was like, why aren't we using these solutions? And it fundamentally came down to the problem that people weren't aware of these solutions and didn't really know that there were better ways of working, because you're so busy. All of us are over capacity and we're just going, all right, this is how we do it. This is how we're going to do it tomorrow. And this is how we're going to do it the next day, even though there's a better solution out there. So the newsletter's goal is to help increase the adoption of technology solution and technology penetration in the industry. And I think one is awareness, and then two is education. So how do we actually get good pilots? How do we actually operationalize into a workflow? So everything downstream of better, all right, I know exactly what solution is out there for my pain point. How do I actually start using it tomorrow?
What have you learned through these years? Like, what's the high level things that you took from writing?
I mean, like at the starters, it's really hard. But I think also downstream is, yeah, there isn't really a best practice of what is becoming an emerging role of a construction technologist, which is the people who bridge the gap between technology and construction. So they come from construction, they can speak the language of construction, but they understand tech and they understand how it can be integrated into that workflow. And they really need to connect the dots there. There's Bechtel's Office of Innovation or Suffolk with their Boost program. And all of these have these great innovative ideas, but across the industry, how are we going to apply this? And then how do we go downstream to the smaller contractors who do most of the work? They don't have the funding for a big program. How do we give them the education and the understanding of how to implement tech? And I think we just need best practice documents and information that's freely available. If you care about technology and improving the way we work in construction, where are you going to go? Where are you going to learn that? And I think getting experts to speak and platform them on the newsletter is one way of helping to achieve that.
So you're saying that the big like a bottleneck here if to adopt tech is the implementation. Am I getting it correctly? Implementation. It is a tough thing, I think, because innovation is always comes with the resistance on the other side. So the construction people always have used to do things for decades in a certain way. So and the question is how in an interactive and engaging way you make them do it differently.
Yeah, and it's a really tough question because there isn't just a, set it and forget on tech. We have to train people to use new processes and understand the new processes. And it has to come from the industry a lot of the time because you also have to understand the existing way that it works. So my current role is in an innovation role, and you notice these problems every day, and you just need to sit there with the people and train them up and explain them, hey, this is better. And as soon as a person understands, oh, wow, this works on site, this is going to improve my life, they'll start using it immediately. But it's just getting to that place, reducing the time to value, as we call it, is really, really hard. Because, yeah, like, do you have 2 hours of your day when you're in heavy delivery on a major project to actually train yourself in a new process? Probably not. So that's the real difficulty.
So what's your thoughts on content creation and construction tech? I'll share mine. And I've been brewing, is that a word? I don't know, something like that. On this kind of idea. So there's a lot of talk from the external industry, not just within construction tech, but let's say like more consumer and people that have been in the content creation space about hyper niche and focus audiences. So I was really sort of digging that earlier this year, and then I came across an article from the CEO of Patreon, and he was like sort of plugging this even further and saying there is this concept in the death of the follower. So their thesis now is investing in true fans, so like deep quality content. The number of viewers and subscribers is like is quite unimportant. I mean, there is some significance in certain circumstances. For example, if your business relies on views and perhaps ad revenue via YouTube, then you need to basically get as many eyeballs as you can. So with construction tech, what I'd just be interested to see, Martin, you're smirking. What's your thoughts?
Where should I start unpacking it? I mean, let's give it to Bragan.
No, you're strongly opinionated on this.
Okay, what is your understanding of death of the follower, Owen, and this quote of Patreon CEO?
Well, he's basically saying that I just said follower numbers, subscribers don't count. It's about the quality of the follower.
Yeah, but how can you build a content platform without having followers?
No, it's the quality.
It's
So
yeah,
I
I'm not. He's not saying that.
he's
yeah,
yeah
but
he I
with
think
the
he's
quality, then if there's a good quality, then people come and would like to subscribe and be part of the show. Yeah, let's call it. Yeah. So I think the follower number is crucial and important. And if you look at someone's profile or newsletter and they say they have 56 followers or 56 subscribers, and then you look at someone who has 157,000, then you kind of make a judgment, unfortunately, subconsciously, that 157,000 is probably more valuable than 56 in general.
Then you're
Happy
thinking
to
a
debate that.
consensus.
You're
Yeah, I'll take the
thinking like a
complete opposite
majority.
view.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'll take the opposite view. The bigger your audience, the more general your topics have to be because it has to address more people. But for
Correct.
higher quality, you've got to connect with the true fan, which is a smaller audience, and that results in hyper niche content. So for me, it might be, all right, I really want to target innovation managers who need education on best practices on how to adopt construction tech solutions. How many of them are out there? Not that many, probably right now, but it's a growing market. But if you can address that market as an advertiser, that's highly, highly valuable. But then downstream of that, it's valuable to startups and VCs who want to understand how the people who are procuring the solutions work. So I think it is really valuable to be hyper niche. And we like one example, like in the B2B market, is Workweek, which did broad newsletters for the B2B industry. And they had one called Keep Cool, which had 20,000 subscribers, 45% open rate, and they dropped it off their platform because they found that even though that they had a really good open rate and a lot of people, the audience didn't have a high leverage to pay. So it was really hard to monetize. And as soon as you get executives or the right people reading your content who are making those decisions in the B2B space, they're going to actually pay for the solution. So I'd rather have 20 execs versus a conference of 2,000 people, right? Like if I'm a sponsor, I want to sponsor the executive breakfast, not the entire conference. And
No, 100% agree. Yeah.
very good.
Yeah,
Dragon, sorry, go on.
just on this. So I think it comes down to objectives. So there's different objective if someone wants to have 10 subscribers or a paying person for the newsletter or whatever that is. And this different objective for a business who would like to have 200,000 followers or 200,000 paying person, right? So it's completely different business model, completely different objectives, completely different revenue, completely different costs. So
What do you think in
two different
construction
things.
tech? Which one would you do? If you were a construction tech startup, would you go for big follower count or would you go for high quality?
I think you probably go into, I think if you are an expert in something, you probably want to go into niche because you understand it very well. You can resonate with people who are willing to listen to you or to read you. So probably you start with a niche. And actually, as we chatted earlier, there's like no superstars within construction technology who
Excuse
are
me.
like,
You're
oh my
killing my
goodness,
dream.
delusion.
I think it depends on your who, like who are you targeting. But there could be some like sneaky penetration strategies, and maybe it's like one part of your strategy, right? So, that if you're a VC, your content strategy might not be to, prove that you're a fool. I know that should be part of what you're doing, but it may just be solely to attract deal flow. It might not be like you're trying to say like you have another agenda or you're trying to attract LPs or whatever. Like deal flow is like their whole business. So If you're not doing that, then what
Apparently,
are
they
you
don't, VCs don't struggle with deal flows. That's what they say.
doing? Yeah, I think ROI on followers is just so difficult to understand.
Yeah, it's a super interesting topic actually, as to get into intricacies of
Dragon, I'm interested in your like your kind of demographic spread of audience. Do you are you say you're targeting innovation managers? I know that might be the goal, but is that actually the result?
No, a lot of startup founders I've noticed. Yeah, a lot of startup founders with expert niches. I find it really interesting. So I'll have calls with a bunch of people each week who are subscribers. And what I found really interesting is everyone who I call with is either a founder or an expert in what they're doing. I haven't had a person who's, hey, I'm a new entrant into the industry and I just want to learn. I've had maybe one or two of those, but every single other one is they're a VC investing in construction tech. They're a founder who's been here for at least 3 to 5 years. Everyone's an expert. There's literally no one who isn't, I guess, almost filtered in a way of, hey, I'm a general person who's interested in construction.
What are they looking for?
I mean, I just enjoy those
Conversations.
conversations. So to me, it's like that's more of what I want. I want it to be people who care about construction, understand the industry, and therefore, to me, I go, all right, this is the audience I want to target. But then it means my content is resonating with people who really understand construction. So it must mean that it is of higher quality. Oh, that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I've been sort of also brewing on this other thought about negative CAC. So there's people who have been talking, like various content influencers in the world have been speaking about this idea of owning distribution channels. So they said, like, if you're building a startup or starting a company in 2024, you should really consider starting from media, because once you own that distribution channel, your customer acquisition cost, I don't know if negative, like there's still a cost associated with the media production,
Agree.
but it's way less than like, yeah, if you're trying to build a product and then marketing it, like a
Well,
flip.
you can make the argument that the cost of software development is rapidly going towards zero. So the only real cost is acquisition. And the
Yes.
cheapest way to get acquisition is through media, either through acquiring a media asset or building an audience. And relatively, it's quite cheap to build an audience if you're young or new to the industry and you start sharing your thoughts.
Yeah.
And they do say, like, you should get an audience co-founder these days. If you have a co-founder with a really strong audience and you bring the technical skills, well, technically, you now have a co-founder with cheap CAC. So that could be the way.
Wow, that's really interesting.
One pushback on this is that building a media entity, it takes a lot of time, a lot
And
of
cost.
and a lot of time on the axis of time, like not in the in 1 day or 2 days, but it takes months and years, right? Not
But I mean, a
necessarily.
startup takes months and years.
Yes,
Yeah. But
it
I
sure
think it's
does.
interesting to
But
see.
startup is so Bragan on this. Startup is the outcome already. So you are saying that okay, my startup will provide you with the outcome, which is a product or service. With media, you're saying, I'm great. Look at me. Look at me. And perhaps I'll have a product on the back. You know what I'm
But
saying,
that's
right? So it's marketing.
Yeah, it is marketing, but I think it's also servicing a need, right? Like you guys are a great example of we have a need for high quality construction tech content and people want to watch that. People aren't watching it. I mean, you guys are great, but people aren't going, oh, I really want to hear what Owen and Martin are saying. We want to hear what questions Owen and Martin are asking to these great founders and to these great VCs because we know that you understand the industry and you can unlock insights that we can't unlock. So there is a need. And then off the back of that, I trust you and I trust what you're thinking. So if you build a product, I'm going to go, look, I'm going to pay for that product more than I'll pay for others. And construction is such a relationship-based industry. The amount of times that you pay extra because you like the person that you are going to work with, that happens so often. And if people like you and what you guys are doing is building relationships at scale, people like you, if you build a product, I assume people will buy that product. And they assume that there's a high quality bar associated with it because we see the quality of your podcast. You're not just going to throw out something that sucks.
Okay,
Yeah,
thank you, Hank.
on that, do you have
You're
like an
getting
idea,
red.
Braga?
Sorry, what did you say, Alvin?
I was saying, do you have an do you have you thought about monetization?
I have thought about it a lot, but I don't really know the pathway. There's a few that come to mind down the track, and I think it just comes down to standard audience building. I think in a lot of other industries, we've seen content creators coming up and about, and there's really standard ways that they monetize their audience. And I think that's the first step. But what I enjoy from the amount of people that I get to talk to is, in so many ways, it's customer discovery. So I have my own little CRM and I'll take notes on every conversation, as I think everyone does. And that just becomes this massive pain points that I'm learning. And like I said, the biggest pain point is education. I think it's just a really natural step of how do we educate people who are interested in construction tech, and how do we get more people into the industry? And an audience is one way of doing that. And then partnering with people who can provide really high quality services is another way.
Yeah. Okay. We should think about wrapping up. Half hour goes way too quick on these things. Martin, what did you enjoy this week?
I very much enjoyed yesterday's visit to Monumental in Amsterdam. We had 5 hours. Well, we almost had recorded 5 hours of very good interviews with Salar, Sepp, and team. And also we got one of the investors, Walter. Yeah, so it was very, very good, very eye-opening conversations. And I really liked, I'm a customer right now. I've not bought anything from them, but I really buy into the idea of robotics for bricklaying, and not only, and the plans that they have to robotize kind of activities within construction. Yeah, so very, very good. Very good trip.
Salar is mm-hmm. the true definition, in my opinion, of a super founder. The way he talks and thinks about things, and his methodology and reason behind doing what he's doing is like something I never heard before. So I'm super excited about that company and where those guys are going.
I'm really keen to listen to this.
And they don't have anyone in the team who is like, engineer, architect, this kind of
stuff.
They
do have mechanical engineers.
But... yeah, of course. Mechanical, automation engineers, obviously software engineers.
So they're all from external to the industry? Is anyone from construction?
I don't think so.
No, so one question I had, just very quickly, like preview. One question I had was like how they get... So their robot lays bricks. And I was really curious as to how they get paid. Like, does someone have the traditional construction, the quantity surveyor, whoever goes to site and takes a valuation and sends it to the contractors as pay me? But they built that into the robot itself.
Yeah.
And they can show brick by brick, like literally, they take data points of every single one brick
has position. Been installed.
Yeah, and they can send that like, right, this is what we want paying for. Like, so I think like they have a strategy to almost take away the need for like foremen and maybe site managers, quantity surveyors, whatever it is within their product.
To a degree, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So, the data they collect is insane, honestly. Every brick is like position is exactly how it is. Not like, you know, like, oh, wait, that's the brick, that's another. It's the coordinates of each of the corners. It's just absolute mind-blowing, yeah? And what can perhaps with this data, next is probably interesting thing.
Yeah, you for the BIM model, like a starters. But I mean, I always ask the question, if we started from scratch and built a contractor today, what would it look like? Obviously, they built a subcontractor from scratch, and this is what it looks like. But if we built a GC from scratch and had all the technology enablement from scratch, what would it look like? And
so
it would
Salar exactly answered this question. Actually, so
oh really?
If you listen,
yeah, let's
if you
spill the beans.
Yeah, no. If you listen, you will find out.
By the way, there's a huge pay war associated with it. So,
just saying.
Brian, how about you? What was for
the highlight? I've had some interesting conversations. I'm working on a series on how do we get from lab to site on new sustainable materials. So I've just been having conversations around that, and there's a really interesting one that I had around code compliance, which I'm not going to reveal anything, but it's a really interesting how you get around the, well, like how you go through the regulatory process, and very eye-opening. So I would be really interested to share that and see what people think.
Is it like structural code or some other code?
No, like, yeah, international code.
International. But within what kind of area? Like,
well, just if you're creating a new material and it's a sustainable material, do you need to get compliance requirements, historical performance data? And it's just, how do we navigate this process is so difficult. So I was going through research on that, and I've just found all these places where it's really hard. And that was a place that I thought it was hard, but it was just interesting how different companies navigate it.
So I hope to read about it in last week in Contech soon.
Yeah, Bragan, tell people, where can people sign up for the last week
in Contech? Yeah, so just if you Google last week in Contech, it'll come up as a Substack link. So yeah, just Google last week in Contech and then yeah, you can subscribe there. Or if you follow me on LinkedIn, it should be on my LinkedIn profile as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right, guys.
Thank you very much.
You.
Thanks for having me, guys.